Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.com. And you can go to public affairs programming. I thank the listener who let me know that I had been saying go to local programming and looked for Your Financial Choices, and it's actually under public affairs, Your Financial Choices. So thank you so much for letting me know that I was saying that wrong. Today is January 22nd, 2020. The markets were pretty flat today, with the Dow closing at 29,186, the NASDAQ at 9,383, and the S&P at 3,321. Our topic tonight is the Secure Act. The Secure Act. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I did have a question come in through the website earlier today, and I'll address that as we go through the show. So the Secure Act stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act. So setting every community up for retirement enhancement. So that's where they come up with the secure part of it. So it's the Secure Act, and it includes some tax extenders and some other changes, and used a couple different things for reference. What was interesting to me was that I didn't find anything on the IRS's website regarding the Secure Act. So I was surprised by that. And so there is an advisor out there named Michael Kitsis, who's just wonderful to the advisory community through his website. And that's at kitsis.com. That's K-I-T-C-E-S. And he has people who work with him. And there was an article on the Secure Act, and it was written by Jeffrey Levine, who's a CPA and a CFP. And I use that as a guide for the show this evening, plus some information that I got from the Congressional Research Services about the Secure Act, and some other resources that I have. But I appreciate those resources that are available for me to help educate our listeners about this very important Secure Act, and it's going to impact a lot of people. So I think it's really important to talk about. At a high level, let me kind of go over some of the big changes, and then after I do that, we'll kind of dig into some of the details. But again, of course, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So high level summary, and I'm not going to cover everything because, first of all, some of the pieces of the act were around retirement accounts for employers, and that is very specific. So I'm going to kind of breeze over that and talk about the pieces of the act that are going to impact us as individuals and what we kind of have to pay attention to. So high-level summary, there were major changes to the distribution period for non-spouse beneficiaries of retirement accounts. Many of you might have heard of something they call the stretch IRA. That's just a made-up name for beneficiaries of retirement accounts whereby you can take out distributions over your life expectancy and stretch that out further than maybe the decedent life expectancy had been when they died. So if someone dies and they were taking out required minimum distributions, and then you're the child and you inherit it, if your parent, you know, was 85 and their life expectancy might have been at 10 years at that point, and now I'm going to make this up, 40, my life expectancy might be another 45 years. So that allowed us to stretch out the taxation of a retirement account over a longer life expectancy than the person who originally owned it. They have changed the distribution requirement now for non-spouse beneficiaries and most beneficiaries. There's some other exceptions. They've changed the distribution period, and it's going to accelerate the distribution. So we're going to talk about that. They have, in the Secure Act, increased the required minimum distribution age. So many of you know required minimum distribution, sometimes people call it RMD, some people call it MRD, minimum required distribution, has been age 70 and a half. They have increased that age. It's no longer 70 and a half for people who turn 70 and a half after December 31st of 2019. So important to hear about that and how that might impact people who thought they were going to have to take a required minimum distribution this year in 2020, and maybe you don't. So we're going to talk about that. Qualified charitable distributions, people who have been age 70 and a half have been allowed to make distributions from their IRA account to a qualified charity and not pay taxes on that, subject to certain limitations. And we're going to talk about if there's been any change to that. The removal of the age limit to IRA account contributions for eligible workers. So prior to the Secure Act, if you reached age 70, you could no longer put money into an IRA. They've changed that. There is going to be a special no penalty provision for $5,000 early distributions from an IRA for adoption or qualified birth. So for people who've had to take money out of retirement accounts before they reach age 59 and a half, there are some exceptions to an early withdrawal penalty that otherwise would normally apply, a 10% penalty that would apply if you're taking money out early. They have expanded the exceptions to that penalty for certain distributions. There's a reversion of the kiddy tax rules that is for children under certain ages who have unearned income. Their unearned income over certain thresholds could be subject to what we call the kiddie tax rules. And in the past, the kiddie tax rules meant the parents' tax rates. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changed those tax rates to the estate and trust tax rates, and now they've switched it back to the parents' tax rates. But there's some very interesting implications of that, so I'm going to talk about that when we have time. There's a reversion of the medical limitation for people who itemize. It had changed to 10% of your adjusted gross income. So if your medical expenses exceeded 10% of your adjusted gross income, you could include those when itemizing. And they have changed that back to 7.5%. So maybe more people will be able to actually take a medical deduction. But with the increase in the standard deduction, so many people are taking the standard deduction now anyway. So it might not matter anyway, but something to be aware of. They've expanded the 529 eligible distributions. We're going to talk about how that applies to a couple different ways you can use 529 distributions. And they have extended a couple deductions that they had done away with that are back. And then lastly, again, what I'm not going to really refer to too much, but just so you know, there are some tax credits for certain small businesses establishing retirement accounts, and they've also expanded the employee participation. So there are some credits there, but I'm not going to go over that part tonight, but I'm going to talk about some of these big provisions in more detail as we go through the show. Very important, Secure Act, lots of changes. You really need to be aware of them to make sure that you're taking advantage of any tax planning strategies that you can implement while you're aware of these things. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about the Secure Act this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me, and I'll do my best to answer your question. So again, 610-758-8810. So in talking about the Secure Act, I would say the biggest change that will have the farthest reaching impact, in my opinion, is the elimination of this stretch IRA. So the retirement account beneficiary in the past could take out distributions over their lifetime, and now they're going to accelerate the distribution. So let me see if I can make sure people understand. First, when you're working, you might be putting money into an IRA, or you might be putting money into a 401k or a 403b. These are incentives to save for our retirement. The IRS will give us tax deductions for doing so. If it's an IRA, we get the deduction. It's a very, you know, small deduction, but we can get a deduction. It's on a pre-tax basis. And in a 401k, 403b, we can put a lot more money into those. But again, it's on a pre-tax basis. Occasionally, people are in low tax brackets or they don't need the tax deduction. They may be doing contributions to retirement accounts on an after-tax basis or using a designated Roth 401k or a Roth IRA. So Roths are those accounts that we're using kind of after-tax dollars, and they grow income tax-free that when we take out a qualified distribution when we retire, those are income tax-free. But I am talking traditionally about the pre-tax retirement accounts that we typically use, IRAs, traditional IRAs, simple IRAs, SEP IRAs, 401ks, 403bs. Because this is where it's going to have an impact when we're talking about accelerating a distribution that will be income taxable much faster than we thought it was going to be. So when we're working and we're putting money away, we're saving it on a tax-deferred basis. Eventually, when we retire and we start taking money out of our retirement accounts, we're going to pay income tax at that point. We can take it out once we reach age 59 and a half without a penalty, and we just pay the income tax on it. And we can start it as early as that without a penalty, paying the income tax. But if we don't take any money out, the IRS will tell us that you have to start taking it out at some point. And that age in the past was age 70 and a half. That is changing to age 72. I'll talk about that in a minute. But if we were to pass away and die, and we've named a beneficiary on our retirement account, that beneficiary, as long as they, you know, make the election and do it in the proper time period, they would then be able to take the money out. The required minimum distribution starts the year after the person dies. So I could inherit an account. Let's say I'm age 40. The required minimum distribution date for me as a beneficiary under prior law would be that I would have to take out a minimum required amount by December 31st of the year following the year of death. So if someone died in 2019, my first required minimum distribution would be 2020, and it would be over my life expectancy. And that is what we called the stretch IRA. It was just a name for it. It wasn't an official name. It wasn't an IRS name. We just called it like a stretch IRA because we could stretch it. We could have named a grandchild who was age 2 as the beneficiary, and they could take it out over their life expectancy, which might be like 90 years for a 2-year-old. There was lots of ways to stretch that out. The idea being, the longer you stretch it out, the smaller the distribution, maybe the more you could control the tax consequences. So with the SECURE Act, which was signed into law in December of 2019, they have changed the rules for non-spouse beneficiaries. So what happens now is you're going to accelerate the distribution. So let me go over a few things. First, a spouse named as a beneficiary in a retirement account. That's why I keep saying this stuff applies to a non-spouse beneficiary. A spouse named as a beneficiary in a retirement account can make that retirement account their own, and thereby they take distributions over their life expectancy following the required minimum distribution rules, just like the decedent would have. So a spouse can make it their own, follow the regular, you know, IRS rules for minimum required distributions. For anyone reaching age 70 and a half in 2019 or prior, they must continue taking their required minimum distributions as scheduled. For anyone reaching age 70 and a half after January 1 of 2020, the new required minimum distribution age is 72. Okay, so that gives you a couple more years, basically. And you have until April 1st of the year following the year you turn age 72 to take your distribution. So they give you a little bit of time. Now, if you wait until April 1st of the next year, then in that next year, you're going to have 2 required minimum distributions to take. So you just have to be careful about that. But the IRS prior had let us also, when we reached age 70 and a half, we had to April 1st to take it out. So they've kept that April 1st date, but now it's 72, none of this half year stuff. So for deaths prior to 1-1-2020, so if someone has died prior to January 1st of 2020, the designated beneficiary may continue to take their distributions over their life expectancy based on the IRS life expectancy tables. Okay, so they still get that stretch. For deaths January 1st, 2020 or later, most non-spouse beneficiaries will have to take the distributions within 10 years following the year of inheritance. So following the year of inheritance, and I use that word specifically, following the year of inheritance, because you may not be entitled to that like the year after death, and I'll talk about what that means. So there is an exception to the 10-year rule. I mentioned non-spouse I mentioned spousal beneficiaries. So that's an exception because they can make their own. So other exceptions to the 10-year rule for people who are deemed eligible designated beneficiaries would be those beneficiaries that are disabled, that are defined under certain IRS codes, Internal Revenue Code sections. They can continue to use life expectancy, the traditional life expectancy tables over their lifetime. Chronically ill beneficiaries, again, defined by the Internal Revenue Code, can continue to use the life expectancy stretch. Individuals who are not more than 10 years younger than the decedent, not more than 10 years younger. So this might happen, like if you have a sibling, so maybe your brother is 65 and they pass away and you're 60. You're not more than 10 years younger, and you can continue to take it out over your life expectancy. And then here's the other piece. Certain minor children of the original account owner until they reach the age of majority in their state. So that could depend on what state the child is in for the age of majority. In Pennsylvania, it's 21. So certain minor children of the original retirement account owner, they don't have to take it out until they reach age of majority, but then they do have to do it with over 10 years. And that's where the little caveat I said, where 10 years following the year of inheritance. So if that certain minor child turns 21, it's 10 years from after that year of inheritance. Okay, so we'll talk more about this as we go along. It sounds a little complicated, and it might be at first, but we will get used to it. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we're talking about the SECURE Act. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. You can just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. So we are talking about the SECURE Act, and the biggest part of this act that I think is going to have the most impact, and boy, will you realize it if you become a beneficiary of a big retirement account. So you might not be thinking about it, might not be on your radar, but boy, if you end up inheriting something big from mom and dad or grandma, grandpa, or aunt or uncle or brother or sister, this could really have a big impact when we're talking about large retirement accounts, the acceleration of the required minimum distribution. So this is one way the SECURE Act has some provisions that are going to cost some tax dollars, but this provision is going to increase some tax dollars, at least in the near future. So I want to mention, I had mentioned some exceptions to the 10-year rule. I also want to mention some additional flags that you have to be aware of. And to this point, I want to mention last week we had attorney Nick Nanovic on the show from Gross McGinley, and we talked about trusts and when do they make sense. And a lot of people have done financial planning and estate planning and have worked with their attorneys, have worked with their financial advisors to manage sometimes retirement accounts that might be quite large, going to people that maybe the account owner doesn't want to get all that money really fast. So they put it in trust. Maybe they make the beneficiary of an IRA, and there's certain guidelines, certain language, qualified language you want in a document if you're going to do such a thing. But a lot of people have done that. And it's going to be very important for you to talk to your estate attorney if you have, in your planning, used a trust as a beneficiary of an IRA. Because there could be issues. Again, they should be reviewed as soon as possible if the retirement account owner has not passed away yet. So trusts reach the highest tax rate of 37%, just shy of about $13,000. So can you imagine if you've left $1 million IRA to a trust and all of a sudden there's certain language in that trust that says the trustee maybe can't take that money out, can't pass it out to the beneficiary until X time or X date or under certain conditions. And now the IRS tells us we have to take this money out within 10 years. It could cause some major tax ramifications. So if the beneficiary is a trust, they're deemed to be the eligible designated beneficiary, you want to make sure that you're reviewing this with an attorney. Now, if the trust can see through to maybe a disabled beneficiary or a chronically ill beneficiary, just like I said, that was an exception to the 10-year rule. That would continue to be an exception to that, and they could take it out over their life expectancy. But still very important to review regardless. Don't think, oh, you know, that's my exception. I'm good. I don't need to review it. Still would be very important to review these items. I had a question come in through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and I think it really demonstrated the kind of the impact that this might have and what you kind of have to pay attention to. So Gary had emailed a question. Subject was 10-year limit on the inherited IRA. So Gary was already ahead of the show tonight, knew about the SECURE Act, knew that there was this new rule. And he asked, what are the tax consequences of cashing in the entire IRA at the beginning and not having any payout? So what he's asking there, the rule says you have to take it out within 10 years. It doesn't say when within 10 years. You could do 1/10 a year. You could do it all in the first year, all in the last year. You could do some in the first year, some in the fourth year, some in the eighth year. You could do any combination of taking the money out within 10 years, as long as you take it out within 10 years. So this was my response to Gary. Thanks for the question. Assuming the beneficiary is a non-spouse and otherwise no other exception applies, and the death was post December 31st, 19, because recall, if the person died December 31st, 19 or before, then it's the old rules and you can use the regular life expectancy table. So this assumes that someone has passed away post 12/31/19, and now we have a beneficiary who's going to be subject to these rules. So the tax consequences of cashing in the entire inherited IRA in the beginning versus over the 10-year period will depend on each beneficiary's own taxable income and the amount of the distribution. So if an IRA, for example, is $1,000, the tax consequences would be at the marginal tax rates, and it's probably very inconsequential if it's a $1,000 IRA in this story. If the IRA is $1 million, though, obviously the tax consequences would be much different. So the recommendation would be to consider your own tax situation if it makes sense to feather out the distributions over several years or hopscotch it over lower income years or to take it out all at once. So you'd want to review the circumstances, your own circumstances, the amount of the IRA, what's going to make sense. Whatever method is chosen, the IRA would have to be fully depleted within 10 years. Other items, though, to note would be the impact on other income-related consequences. And this is what some people might not realize. They might think, well, I'll just take the money out because I'm not in a bad tax bracket. But you have to understand how that chunk of income is going to hit your tax return and what else might happen. So you want to consider the taxation of Social Security benefits. Because Social Security is taxed based on how much other income is on your tax return. So maybe you do want to take it all at once and kind of tax your Social Security at 85% one time. And then subsequent years, you wouldn't have that extra income. Maybe you don't want to do that at all. Maybe you could take out just enough to still keep some of your Social Security not taxable. there are other implications that may be impacted. There's something called a Medicare surtax and the net investment tax on income that surpasses certain thresholds, depending on your filing status. So if we're throwing extra income on the tax return, are we also causing other income taxes on our tax return that we otherwise would not have had? So there are more implications. I will finish my answer to Gary when we come back from our halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 is 6:30. Your current temperature right now is 34. Tonight, mostly clear with the low around 17. On your Thursday, it's going to be mostly sunny with a high near 44. Thursday night, low around 25. And for your Friday, it's going to be partly sunny with a high near 46. Friday night is going to have a chance of rain and freezing between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., low around 32. Saturday is going to be high near 40. Saturday night, you're going to have rain and snow likely between 10 p.m., but mostly cloudy with a low around 33. Sunday is going to be a chance of snow showers before 7 a.m., but mostly cloudy with a high near 40. And Sunday night, it's going to be low around 31. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, we are talking about the Secure Act this evening. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. You can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. The phone number is 610-758-8810. So Gary had sent a question in through yourfinancialchoices.com about what are the tax consequences of cashing an entire IRA at the beginning and not having any payout over the 10 years. And we talked about how it depends on your own personal income tax situation, how big the IRA is, and what's going to make sense as to whether you feather out the distributions possibly evenly over 10 years or unevenly over 10 years, or if you hopscotch and do it certain years and not other years, or if you take it all out at once, the beginning or at the end. It all depends on your own circumstances. But keeping in mind that whatever plan you have, kind of doing a projection of the period of time to see what kind of impact taking this money on your tax return will have, keeping in mind that it could affect the taxation of Social Security. It could affect the extra taxes you might have to pay on net investment income and the Medicare surtax if you're go over certain thresholds. For example, married, filing, joint, if your income goes over $250,000, then you could have these extra taxes on wages and or net investment income. The other thing it could impact, some people don't realize, when you have investment income, it could be qualified dividends that qualify for a lower tax rate or long-term capital gains. Both of these qualify for a capital gains tax rate, which is lower than the regular ordinary income tax rates. It's a zero on qualified dividends and long-term capital gains to the extent basically that you're in the 12% bracket or lower. The normal rate is 15%, but can go as high as 20% when you're in the top tax brackets, which for married filing joint people is a little bit over $400,000. So you could bump up some of the tax rates that you would have if you add this extra income to your tax return. Another piece that you'd have to watch out for is if you are 65 or older and you have Medicare premiums that you pay through your Social Security, or maybe you write a check, maybe you haven't collected Social Security yet, but you have Medicare premiums. If you go over certain income thresholds, then your Medicare premiums may jump up too. So it's not just about looking at the income tax rate you can expect to pay. It's kind of factoring in all these other pieces that could be impacted. So, Gary, that is my answer. It's about planning and about being smart about when you're doing this. Some other things to think about, and this is, you know, as planners, we have to kind of pay attention to what this is going to look like now, because what we might have planned in the prior year may not apply anymore going forward with these new rules. So, for example, maybe, you know, someone has, you know, four kids, and maybe they decided they're going to give the house to one kid and the IRA to one kid and the vacation home to another kid and maybe cash to another kid and try to equalize them that way. Sometimes people don't do their giving equally. Sometimes they're not saying, oh, I have four kids, 25% each. Maybe they have grandchildren that they love and they want to accommodate them. And sometimes grandchildren aren't minors anymore. You know, we can have children who are 60 and grandchildren who are 40 and great-grandchildren who are 20. You might want to think about, does it make sense to name more beneficiaries? Maybe you want to name your children and your grandchildren if you have really, really large IRAs. You want to look at the planning for that. So in the past, we might have thought, hey, my children don't need the money. I'm going to pass it to my grandchildren. They're just little ones right now, and they can take it out over their life expectancy and really spread that out for a very long time. Well, now if we've accelerated that into 10 years, that would be a much faster distribution. But if we spread it across more people, then we might mitigate some of the tax consequences, but still, from a family planning standpoint, lower the taxes from a family perspective. Okay, so you want to review your beneficiary designations. I do want to reiterate when one of the exceptions to the 10-year rule is minor children. It is minor children of the original retirement account owner until they reach the age of majority. So while we might name our grandchildren, maybe they're minors, they would have the 10-year rule as well. But if I name my minor child, someone has a premature death and has a little one, and they've named their child who's a minor, they don't have to start that 10-year distribution until they reach the age of majority. So lots of planning around this, using maybe multiple beneficiaries. Disclaimers. So for people who aren't familiar with this, this is an estate planning technique. It's called post-mortem planning technique, meaning after someone has died, they could have established primary beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries, meaning if my primary beneficiary passes away, then I've named the next person who's going to get my money. Well, a primary beneficiary could disclaim some of the money, and then whatever they disclaim could go to the contingent beneficiary. There might be a place now in planning to use this. Perhaps a spouse is the beneficiary, and it's great. They can take it out over their life expectancy, but maybe the IRA is really, really big, and maybe a way to kind of mitigate the future income taxation or growth on that might be to have some of it go to a child or a grandchild, whereby they would take a piece of it over 10 years. Let me try to give an example to Gary. I said, what if it's $1 million IRA? Well, if I name my spouse the primary beneficiary of my $1 million IRA, and they can therefore take it over as their own and take it out over their life expectancy, and maybe their life expectancy is another 30 years. But maybe my spouse was planning on making some gifts to my children and wanted to help them out anyway. Well, if I've named my spouse as the primary beneficiary and I've named my children as contingent, my spouse could disclaim some of that $1 million. They don't have to disclaim the whole thing. They can say, I don't want 10% of that. And 10% of that IRA is $100,000. And I'm going to name my two children as, I have three, but in my story, I am going to name my two children as contingent beneficiaries. So if my spouse were to disclaim 10% of the IRA, that's $100,000, and now the contingents on that are my two children, 50-50, that would be $50,000 each to my two children, and they have 10 years to take it out. So that could be a way to kind of mitigate some of the future taxes and get some money into the hands of, you know, maybe the next generation from a tax income tax savings standpoint to spread it out a little bit more. So you can get kind of clever with some of this. The other thing to think about is maybe look more carefully at converting your IRA money to Roth. Now, understand that this 10-year distribution rule applies to Roth IRAs too. And darn, those Roth IRAs we really loved and loved the idea of spreading that out over very long life expectancies, all income tax-free. So now we're going to have to take those out a little faster. So the Roth IRAs don't have the same tax consequences because they're income tax-free, but we still have to take them out pretty quick, over 10 years. But maybe we want to think about if my family, my loved ones, my heirs, my beneficiaries are going to be forced into taking something out very quickly over 10 years. What kind of tax bracket are they going to be in when they have to take it out over 10 years? If it's going to push them into a higher tax bracket, maybe the, you know, 32% tax bracket or the 35% tax bracket, because maybe they're still working and this extra money that's going to come to them is going to throw them into a higher tax bracket. Maybe I'm only, you know, in the 22% bracket now while I'm alive. Maybe I'm only in the 12% tax bracket. Maybe I might want to think about whether or not I convert some IRA money today, because now I actually might be in a lower tax bracket than my beneficiaries might be. All right, so lots of planning that can be done around IRAs, Roth IRAs, using multiple beneficiaries, using disclaimers, doing conversions, and using trust. If you're going to use trust, again, get to your attorney and talk about the implications of that and make sure you understand who your beneficiaries are and what tax brackets they're in and what tax brackets they're going to be in, and compare that to what kind of tax bracket you might be in as well. All right. Part of the SECURE Act, also, as I mentioned briefly, I touched on, was an increase in the required minimum distribution age. So prior, it had been age 70 and a half. So anyone who turned 70 and a half prior to December 31st or December 31st, 2019 or prior, you still have to start your required minimum distributions. So you have to take a required minimum distribution at age 70 and a half if you were 70 and a half December 31st, 2019 or prior. If you turn 70 and a half after that, then that 70 and a half doesn't apply to you anymore. Age 72 applies to you. So here's where we get into a little pickle. If our planning had been with many clients with charitable giving, we love charitable giving and we love using IRAs for charitable giving. Once someone reaches age 70 and a half, they can do something called a qualified charitable distribution. And that qualified charitable distribution at age 70 and a half, instead of taking my required minimum distribution, I could use, I could take some of it out, give it to charity, and then I wouldn't have to pay tax on it. And I can do this up to $100,000. So we loved qualified charitable distributions. And some of our folks, we did planning to say, hey, let's do, you know, several years of giving by donating maybe appreciated securities into a donor advised fund. We do it 5 years worth of giving all at once, 5 years ago, knowing that at age 70 and a half, you can take it out of your IRA, qualified charitable distribution. Well, boom, now they don't have to take a qualified, or they don't have to take a required minimum distribution because they're, you know, they were only going to turn 70 and a half this year. And now what do? We don't have to take an RMD, but hey, my client was thinking we were going to use the IRA for charitable giving. Well, the IRS allows us to still do that. So at age 70 and a half, if you're 70 and a half, and you literally have to be age 70 and a half, you can still take money out of your IRA to give to charity, and it still qualifies as a qualified charitable distribution, and you don't have to pay tax on it. Now, you still might want to wait until you're subject to the required minimum distribution, but if you had promised your favorite charity that you were going to make that donation this year, then just so you know, you still can do it. You might want to use a different method, but that is something that you can still do. And there's just one little caveat I'll talk about on that in along with the increased age of being able to make contributions to IRAs. And I'll get into that when we get back from this next break. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to YourFinancialChoices.com. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org. I think I said WDIY.com earlier. It's WDIY.org. And it's under Public Affairs, Your Financial Choices. So let me kind of go back to something when we're talking about the Secure Act and the qualified charitable distribution. So as I mentioned, at age 70 and a half, they're still allowing us to do the qualified charitable distribution, even if you may not have a required minimum distribution because you're not 70 and a half until after January 1st, 2020. But here's one little caveat. Remember that I said under the Secure Act that they took away the age limitation on making a contribution to an IRA. So in the past, once you reached age 70, you couldn't make a contribution to an IRA, a deductible IRA. They've taken away that. So for people who continue to work after age 70, if you're working and you have earnings subject to the IRA limitations, or if your spouse is working, you can now continue to make contributions to IRAs, and you could do deductible IRAs, meaning you take the deduction on your tax return. That all sounds good. So here's the thing, though. Let's say you do that. Maybe your spouse is much younger than you, and they're working, making a lot of money, and so you're doing these spousal IRAs. You know, you've applied, all the rules apply, and you can make a deductible IRA contribution. And let's say you do that for 5 years, and I'm going to use an easy number. Let's say we do $5,000 deductible IRA for 5 years. That's $25,000. And in year six, you're, you know, over age 70 and a half at this point. You could be age 77. And now you want to do a qualified charitable distribution of $25,000. Maybe that's your RMD. Well, the IRS says, though, now under these new rules, if you made deductible IRA contributions, then you must reduce the qualified charitable distribution that you're eligible to do by those amounts. So in that story, if I wanted to do a $25,000 qualified charitable distribution, and over the five prior years, I had done a $5,000 deductible IRA contribution. This is after age 70 and a half, I think. Now that I'm saying this, is it 72? You have to reduce the amount that you can use towards your QCD. So one way to avoid that is not make deductible IRA contributions, and then you don't have to worry about it. It was just if you made deductible IRA contributions, you have to adjust the QCD by that amount until it's used up. And so let's say you wanted to do a $50,000 QCD and you had done these deductible IRAs of 25, then you could do a $25,000 QCD. And the balance could be a Schedule A itemized deduction. So that's a little bit more complicated than I probably should talk about on air, but something to be aware of. So just be aware of that. Some exceptions to the 10% penalty. So when someone takes money out of an IRA and they're age 59 and a half or older, there is no penalty for early withdrawal because age 59 and a half is the age that the IRS says you can take money out of your IRA account. We're not going to charge you a penalty. You just pay your normal income tax. But there's certain exceptions to that 10% penalty. And they've just added a couple more. So the exception to the additional expanded exceptions to the 10% penalty is the $5,000 distribution from an IRA or plan as a qualified birth or adoption distribution. This has to be within 1 year, beginning on either the date of the birth or the date on which the adoption of an individual under 18 is finalized, per child, per parent. So if you have adopted a child and it cost a lot of money for adoption expenses and you fronted that money from your savings account, you depleted it, the adoption goes through, within 1 year of the legal adoption date, you can take out $5,000 out of your IRA without penalty. Now, you still have income tax, but you can do it without penalty. And each of you could do that. You could take $10,000 out, if $5,000 from each parent, and avoid the 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. All right, so that is an exception to the 10% penalty for adoption or qualified birth. And that could be for any number of children and per parent. There isn't a provision that, let's say you take it out to replenish your cash, and then maybe you wish you wouldn't have taken it out. Maybe you got a bonus and you really didn't need to take that money out. They are saying that you can recontribute it, but I think they're looking for additional guidance on how that would work. So you can recontribute it back to the plan as well, above what your normal contribution would otherwise be. Let's talk about some other expansions that they did, and that is for qualified education expenses for 529 plans. 529 plans, that's the Internal Revenue Code section, 529, governing education savings accounts. The wonderful thing about education accounts, especially for people who are residents of Pennsylvania, is if we make a contribution to a 529 account for someone, we know their name and their social security number, whether I own the account or someone else owns the account. If I make a contribution, I can get a deduction on my tax return to the extent I have income not to exceed $15,000. So it's a great deduction. It's also an income tax-free benefit from a federal standpoint if used for qualified education expenses. They have expanded the use of a 529 to include student loan payments, some, and apprenticeships. So, I want to reiterate that under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they expanded the use of 529s to include $10,000 for tuition, up to $10,000 for tuition for elementary and secondary education. So if you have an elementary student or a high school student in a private school and you have tuition, if the tuition's $10,000 or more, you can take out $10,000 per student. If it's less than $10,000, let's say the tuition's only six, then you could take out six. So it's up to $10,000. That was expanded under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Well, now they've expanded this for student loans and apprenticeships. So the 529s for apprenticeship programs, they have to be appropriately registered and certified with the Department of Labor. And also, the other expansion is distributions of up to $10,000 can be used for qualified education loan repayments, and that could be for principal and or interest. So in the past, I've had people ask, can I use the 529 money to pay for student loans? And the answer has always been no. And now they're allowing it lifetime max for the beneficiary, $10,000. But here's a really weird provision, is that it's $10,000 max lifetime for the beneficiary, but you can also do $10,000 for the beneficiary siblings for loans. So if we have, you know, three kids and one is the beneficiary of the 529, maybe the other two have already graduated and they came out of school with loans, and I have the third kid, we still have 529 money, they get a scholarship, they don't need it all, maybe they have some student loans, I could take up to $10,000 for that kid, for the beneficiary. And if that child has two siblings who have student loans, I could do $10,000 for each of them as well. It's very, very different. I don't know how they came up with this, but that is a qualified expense now of the 529. So the 529 use has been expanded under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and now under the Secure Act. Now, if you do use up to $10,000, again, lifetime max per that beneficiary, per their corresponding siblings, then you can't also then take a deduction for the student loan interest. You can't double dip. So keep that in mind. And they also said this was effective January 1st of 2019. So if you find yourself in a situation where you took money out of the 529 in 2019, and maybe the kid's college was already done, and you thought you could use it to pay for a student loan, well, you couldn't, but now you can, up to $10,000. So that could be an exception to paying tax on a disqualifying distribution from a 529, because now $10,000 would be a qualifying distribution, and that's effective for January 1st. Another big thing that came out of the Secure Act was the kiddie tax. And when children have unearned income greater than $2,200, so unearned income is like investment income. So maybe the kid was a good saver. Maybe they inherited something from grandma and grandpa. Maybe you put money in an account for them when they were little and it's grown. When they have unearned income greater than $2,200 in 2019, they may be subject to what's called the kiddie tax. Years ago, this would be the parents' marginal tax rates. Then with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they changed the kiddie tax rates from the parents' marginal tax rate to estate and trust tax rates. And the estate and trust tax rates are very high, very fast. The Secure Act changes the kiddie tax rates back to the parents' rates. And you can go back and amend the tax return for 2018 to use those rates, or stick with the estate and trust tax rates, whichever are better for 2018 and 2019. So 2018 and 2019, they're letting you choose which tax rates you want to apply, the old, you know, the marginal parents tax rates or the estate and trust tax rates, whichever one is more advantageous. So you may have to amend a return or maybe not amend a return. 2018, 2019, you get to pick. Going 2020 and forward, the kiddie tax is back to the parents' marginal tax rates. All right. So also there was an extension of a deduction for qualified tuition and related expenses. That's going back to 2018, but it's only through 2020, and also a deduction, I think, for the mortgage insurance premiums. But most people who don't itemize anymore don't get a benefit from that anyway. So that isn't such a big deal. But this deduction for qualified tuition and related expenses, that might be nice for some people whose income may be too high for the lifetime learning credit or something like that. So you might want to look to see if you have qualified tuition and related expenses that you could take a deduction for. It's different than a tax credit. So that is back, and it goes back to 2018. You might have to go back and look to amend 2018, but it's also only through 2020. So folks, lots of information on this Secure Act. It's different, but it we can manage it, and we just have to be aware and make sure that you're reviewing your beneficiaries, make sure you're reviewing your primary beneficiaries and your contingent beneficiaries to give you the most options, or to give your heirs the most options should anything happen to you. So please review that, and especially for those people who have trusts that they have named as beneficiaries of IRAs or 401ks or 403bs retirement accounts. Make sure you review those with your attorney. Thanks so much, Greg, for sending, or Gary, excuse me, for sending in the question through yourfinancialchoices.com. I appreciate it. I love questions. And folks, that is available if you have any that you think of, and I can read those on air next week. Next week, we are talking about gearing up for tax season, things to know. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori C. Have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.